Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The United States has had drug crises in the past, but perhaps none as dangerous as the one created by fentanyl. This is a potent synthetic opioid approved by the Food and Drug Administration for use for pain relief and as an anesthetic. In that form, the drug is 50 times stronger than heroin and 100 times more potent than morphine and has been rarely used except in hospital settings. But pharmaceutical fentanyl isn't the problem. The problem is fentanyl distributed through illegal drug markets because of its heroin-like effect and the fact that it is often added to other drugs, which makes them cheaper, more powerful, more addictive, and more dangerous. Often, those ingesting the drug are unaware they're taking it and never intended to, and that is why some have stopped considering illegal fentanyl as a drug. They now view it as poison. Among the more concerning aspects of the current spread of fentanyl is the age of those taking it. It isn't just adults looking for a quick high or addicts trying to get or set a new threshold for their addiction. It is children, some in grade school. It only takes 2 milligrams of fentanyl to kill you. That's about 10 to 15 grains of table salt. Recently, CMPD seized nearly 75 pounds of suspected fentanyl and searched a lab that yielded $120,000 worth of possible fentanyl pills. CMPD has also recently launched an advertising campaign warning young people of the danger they face when taking any illicit drug because it could contain a lethal dose of fentanyl. Here to talk about what is a nationwide problem and what you need to know to protect yourself and your children, and about what local authorities are doing to try to prevent fatalities, is Lieutenant Robert Sprague with the CMPD Vice Unit. Thank you for coming back on the program. Welcome back.
Thanks. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Raynard Washington also is one of our returning champions. He is Mecklenburg County Health Director. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
And Nicole Anderson is a Charlotte area parent whose son Matthew died from unknowingly ingesting fentanyl just after he turned 20. Thank you for being here as well, Nicole, and I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you. I'm grateful for this opportunity to talk about it.
And we'll do that just a little bit later on in the program. But Lieutenant Sprague, I'm going to start with you because you were on this program in August talking about other aspects of the fentanyl crisis. Mm-hmm. At the time, fentanyl overdoses were up, I think, 20% in the first 8 months of this year. What are those statistics now that we're nearly at the end of the year? And what are the raw numbers? Do you know them?
I mean, unfortunately, the numbers have carried on and stayed consistent. We're still 20% up. From last year, we're over 180 fatalities or deaths as a result of overdose. I mean, that's double the number of homicides that we have in the city. So the numbers are staggering.
If this is murder, let's be frank about it. People who are lacing drugs with fentanyl that people then ingest not knowing that they're taking it, and there's no control over how much fentanyl is in these illicit drugs. If somebody dies, it's murder. If this were being done with a pistol or an AK-47, we'd be up in arms about it. Why isn't it spoken about more, Lieutenant?
I think because number one, we're talking about a group of people, a section of society that we've kind of pushed them off to the side. Many of the drug users, you know, we just out of sight, out of mind. But we have to understand that this fentanyl epidemic is not just to one section of town or to one group of people. This is affecting everybody from very young to very old. So I wish that it had more traction than what it does, because you're right. 180 plus people dying as a result of it would be catastrophic if it was a homicide rate. So
Dr. Washington, when we talk about overdoses, a lot of people immediately think somebody died, but that's not necessarily true. You can overdose and still survive it. You can overdose and have it reversed through the use of various chemicals, which we'll talk about. But how many people who overdose end up dying? The majority of them, a portion of them? How would you describe it?
It's certainly a portion, but I don't have a good estimate of exactly how many. I can't give you a magnitude of that, but I would say that our partners at Medic certainly do overdose hundreds of overdoses every year. And so certainly there are more folks, I would suspect there are more overdoses than there are deaths, but certainly I don't have that number right in front of me.
And Lieutenant, would you say fentanyl is the leading cause of overdose deaths in Mecklenburg County right now?
Yes, I would definitely attribute it to that. People just don't know what they're taking, and most of it has fentanyl in it.
Can we extrapolate that out to say that this is probably true in a lot of the surrounding counties and maybe perhaps in much of North Carolina?
Yeah, and as we've seen, again, we've worked in partnership with some of our surrounding counties, and they're being affected by it just as well. So it's happening everywhere across the United States.
People may not understand how people could possibly get their hands on this drug, fentanyl, and not know that they are taking it, Dr. Washington. How is it possible? Why do people not know what they're taking here? Explain that.
Well, so fentanyl's been introduced into a lot of the drug supply and in various forms. So it has been introduced into the cocaine supply, for example, which you might find in a powder form. It's also been introduced into the illicit pharmaceutical drug market. So there are pills that look like potentially prescribed medication, but it's actually been counterfeit or produced someplace else. And it's been incorporated in those as well. Some of those look like opioid pills, but some of them also look like other medications like Xanax that you might take. And so that people may potentially purchase counterfeit versions of, as well as, of course, it is in the heroin supply as well. And then there are some folks who are elected to use fentanyl as their primary drug. And so it's in the supply all over the place, really.
So when Lieutenant Sprague was on this program back in August, Doctor, it was reported at the time that CMPD's vice unit had seized 30 kilograms of suspected fentanyl so far this year. That's enough to kill 15 million people, 30 kilograms. Explain to me how much 30 kilograms is, first of all, and then tell me why this drug is so incredibly potent.
Well, it's kind of hard to say what 30 kilograms is, but it's a lot of pounds. And essentially, as you mentioned earlier, it only takes a very small volume of fentanyl to be potentially lethal, particularly to someone who is not an active user of opioids. And so if you are naive to opioids and don't have any in your system, a small amount, again, just a little teeny specks of it can, once introduced to your body, could cause you to go into overdose.
Pharmaceutical fentanyl, what they use in hospital settings, what doctors legitimately use for pain, killing, and for anesthetics, et cetera, is that a different kind of fentanyl, a different quality of fentanyl? It's certainly more controlled. They have more control over dosage than perhaps an illicit drug maker would, but is it the same substance when you come right down to it?
It's the same chemical compound usually, but because, of course, as you have already mentioned, on the illicit drug market, it's not being made in a controlled environment. You can't guarantee that it's the same, the potency of it. You can't guarantee the quality of it. And oftentimes, it's not the exact same compound as you would find in a medical grade fentanyl. Certainly, that is the concern, because it's being produced by combining various chemicals coming from different sources, all of which you can't necessarily verify the quality of.
So, Lieutenant, in August, as I said, the CMPD seized 30 kilograms of suspected fentanyl, and recently you seized 75 pounds of suspected fentanyl with possible fentanyl pills, and if proven to be fentanyl, it would be worth $120,000. Have any of those seizures been certified as, in fact, being fentanyl?
Yeah, the one, the $120,000 worth, that was confirmed to be fentanyl, pressed fentanyl pills, or to contain fentanyl. And when we say suspected, we say that because our assumption is, and what we have seen, is just about everything has fentanyl in it.
That bears repeating. because there are young people and there are older people who take drugs that are passed around from acquaintance to acquaintance or party to party, and they think they're taking either an innocuous drug or something that might give them a little high. But you're saying that everything on the street.
Yeah, the assumption for all of our detectives and our officers is anytime you come in contact with any type of drug, whether it's considered to be a legal drug or an illegal drug, that you should handle it with care because it probably contains fentanyl. And what we have seen through our testing is that the majority of these, they contain fentanyl, whether it's a very small portion or it's completely the pill itself, let's say, is completely fentanyl.
Wow.
And to your point, they're going to parties and they're taking things maybe that are sold or told to them that it's, Xanax, Percocet, things of that nature, when in fact it's pressed with fentanyl.
So I'm just curious about where you made these seizures, these busts, 30 kilograms here, 75 pounds there, and who is transporting this material? What people are distributing, taking possession of, and then distributing these vast quantities of drugs?
Well, it's like a progression of from sellers. They started off maybe selling marijuana, but then in fact, when they see that the price point and how much money that they can make, they move into the avenue of fentanyl. Maybe not making it, but they are certainly selling it. Where it comes from, couldn't tell you. It's coming into the country in mass quantities.
Do they know, the people who are distributing it to the people who are ultimately ingesting it, do they know that they are distributing fentanyl, or are they as much in the dark as the people taking it by mistake?
I think some of them truly don't know, but I think that, again, with this, as my statement before, I think they're just, they're savvy business partners, right? And they realize that these contain fentanyl, but they're, in their minds, they're saying that they're providing a service and they're making a dollar.
CMPD doctor has called this a public health epidemic. You agree with that?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, and it has been for quite some time now. So across the country, we've been seeing the rates of opioid overdoses and poisonings and deaths spike significantly in every community across the country. In fact, this is the same and true as across the state of North Carolina, where overdose rates are actually higher than they are here in Mecklenburg County. And so certainly this problem is one that we have to collectively contend with, both at the local, state, and federal public health levels.
Illegal dope manufacturers are lacing these other drugs with fentanyl because, as we've said, it's more powerful, it's more addictive. If it doesn't kill you, it's cheaper, so you can stretch out the supply and make more money if you're a pusher. But very little of it in the wrong amount can, as we said, kill you. I would imagine the places in which they manufacture these pills that are laced with fentanyl aren't paying or perhaps don't have the ability to pay very much attention to exactly how much fentanyl is going into the final product. And since that is the case, why would you as a manufacturer, or why would you as somebody distributing this drug, be distributing something that you know could kill your customers? Why would you do that, Lieutenant?
Well, I don't think that the legitimate companies are the ones that are distributing it. I think, like Mr. Washington said, that
well, I know
you
that.
Have...
But even if you're an illicit drug pusher, why would you distribute something that's going to kill your customer?
Well, their hope is that it doesn't, and that they are able to find the exact amount. And they're pushing the envelope to bring back their customers. So the more powerful the fentanyl drug, or the more powerful the drug, the better customer.
We have to take a break. We'll come back with more of this in a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks, a listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the fentanyl crisis. It's a public health crisis as defined by CMPD and now by Dr. Raynard Washington, who's with us. He's the health director from Mecklenburg County's Health Department. Lieutenant Robert Sprague is also here from the Vice Unit. at CMPD. And in a moment, we will meet Nicole Anderson, who has a personal story to tell about this. We are told, Lieutenant, that China is a manufacturer of the chemicals that are the basic, I guess, the baseline of what goes into fentanyl, and they ship it to Mexico and other countries south of our border. What happens then? Explain the process and the supply chain from China and from wherever else the base chemicals are manufactured to the time it gets into somebody's hands here in Mecklenburg County.
So it'll take probably two different routes. One will be the raw materials that'll come into the country and somebody will make it here, like we've had in Charlotte, where they were pressing and creating it themselves. And then you'll have it where it'll be in other countries where they will manufacture and press the pills there, and then they will bring the pills into the country from there. So it's kind of coming in two different ways.
And last week, obviously, President Biden met with China's leader Xi Jinping, and among the things they discussed was fentanyl. The president said that Xi agreed to take steps to significantly reduce the flow of the ingredients that lead to the manufacture of fentanyl. I don't have any political science people here or any State Department officials here, but Lieutenant, you're not one of them, and I understand that, but can we trust China to live up to that agreement? And even if they do, will illegal manufacturers of this stuff find alternative sources for the base chemicals?
Well, I hope that we can trust them, but what I'm afraid of is that they've already found some of the other manufacturers. The price of this drug has gone down significantly from just a year or two ago. It's about half the price of what it used to be. So it just means to me that the raw materials and the pills themselves are continuing to flood in even at more greater rates than what they were before.
So we have faced, Dr. Washington, other drug crises in the past. We certainly talked about them on this program over the years. There was the heroin epidemic. There was a cocaine epidemic. There was an epidemic of the use and distribution of crack cocaine, all of which were quite serious. The crack cocaine epidemic seemed to be accompanied by senseless violence. What makes this drug crisis different, and how would you compare it to the other crises that we've experienced in our lifetimes?
Well, I think certainly one of the biggest distinctions here is the fatality of the drugs themselves. So the strength of opioids, these synthetic opioids, are pretty outstanding in terms of their ability to kill. And so for starters, the risk of death is so much higher with these opioids, which I would say makes this much more serious than even some of the prior substance use epidemics that we've had in this country. As it relates to the opioid epidemic, it's not just the illicit use of, as we've talked this morning, it is also the fact that these are pharmaceutical products that people can use and have been highly marketed in the world. And so utilization of the opioids, even the approved versions, has spiked over the last decade, which has led to, unfortunately, dependency in communities across the country. And so the other thing about the opioid epidemic, as been described this morning, is that it's touching every corner of this community. It's not just your who folks see as substance users, or folks that you see are homeless neighbors, or folks who are that look a certain way. It doesn't matter your affluency or what neighborhood you live in. There is opioid use happening and overdose happening, and so it's really important that we get the message out to everyone.
Help me understand this, because fentanyl is an opioid, whether it's legitimately manufactured or not. There is the opioid epidemic that we've been dealing with, which most people think, and you're led to believe through books and television shows and movies, that it was created primarily by one company who found a way to get doctors to overprescribe a legitimate medication for pain relief. And it's highly addictive, and it became something that spread into the counterculture because you could only get so many prescriptions for it. And your appetite for it was insatiable once you got hooked on it. But would you characterize the fentanyl crisis that we're talking about today, with this illicit substance being laced into other drugs, in that same category? Is it part of the same epidemic?
I think so. I mean, it is. It certainly is. It's a part of the opioid epidemic. I think it's just a large part of it, and it's a growing part of it, because whereby you typically at the earlier waves of the opioid epidemic, it was largely heroin users who had fentanyl in their heroin or other types of synthetic opioids that were laced in the heroin. Now it's in the entire drug supply, and so folks who would not even have any interest usually in opioids are potentially being exposed to them. And not knowing that they're being exposed to them. And so that's why we're starting to see even more acceleration in the deaths among folks in our community who will say, I was a longtime cocaine user, for example, but will die from a fentanyl overdose because they didn't know that there was fentanyl in the cocaine.
Well, that's why I asked, would you lump it together with the people who are actually seeking opioids, whether through prescriptions or through other means, because they can't get a prescription? When people are getting this substance in other drugs, not knowing that fentanyl is a part of that other drug at all, and they're overdosing and some are dying because they took a pill that they thought was an Adderall, and it wasn't. So I guess what I'm asking is, if people aren't actively seeking fentanyl, they're just getting it because it's in the pill, can we lump it in with the other opioid addiction problem?
I don't call it lumping, Mike. I mean, I think it really is. It's another phase of it. It's another bucket of response. I mean, I think we have to use very similar tactics, both education and awareness, as well as Narcan availability in the community for both. So I would say our response is very similar across the two, with being able to raise awareness in the community about it.
Because one of the things that makes this particular crisis so insidious is that people are not seeking it out. Necessarily. They don't know that they are ingesting it, and they never intended to ingest it. And we've been told repeatedly by police and other authorities that you cannot, it's been said this morning, you cannot trust the safety of any pill that you buy on the street. So many are taking what they think is an Adderall or a Percocet. And Nicole Anderson with us. She is a parent of a young man, Matthew, who lost his life to this at the age of 20. You lost Matthew to fentanyl, but he's an example of someone who didn't intend to take this. He ingested it unknowingly. Tell us Matthew's story here.
Well, I'd be happy to tell you his story, but first I just want to say why I'm here. Okay. Because people who know me know that I don't like speaking publicly, and this is really hard to talk about. You know, this was the most devastating thing that's ever happened to me and our family. And so I'm talking about it and pushing myself to talk about it ever since he died, because I think those numbers that you're referring to, you know, they're huge, but I think statistics and numbers kind of don't necessarily resonate with people the same way a personal story does. And so I'm trying to put a face and a story to something, so hopefully people will listen.
Okay. I know it's difficult, and I appreciate your being here. And I think for the very reasons that you just expressed, I think it has more resonance when it comes from someone who has actually lived through this. So if you would, share what you can of Matthew's story.
Yeah. And he was so much, you know, he's so much more than how he died. Yes. In fact, how he died has nothing to do with who he was as a person. You know, he was a very good son, and he was a good brother. He has three older sisters and two younger brothers who adore him and have been devastated by this. He was a great friend and a good student and a good athlete. And so I'm just hoping that by telling this story, potentially more people will look at their own families and try to do some things to prevent this from happening to them.
And as I understand it, he was, as I said, he was 20 in high school. He had some sports injuries. No. Is that right?
Well, in high school he did, yes. And no, he was a junior at Northeastern University in Boston. Mm-hmm. He had just turned 20, like you said, and it was September of 2021. It's been a couple of years now. He was in a really great place. The pandemic restrictions had been lifted. They were going back to class in person, and he was living with his five best college friends. And one night we got a call from the Boston Police Department saying that Matthew had been found dead in his room at home. His friends had not seen him that day, and they found him and called 911, and it was too late. We were completely blindsided because the police officer said it looked like fentanyl, a fentanyl overdose. And this was extremely confusing for us because Matthew didn't do drugs, to our knowledge, and his friends said he didn't do drugs. And so it was very confusing. And like a lot of people, I'd heard of fentanyl, and I thought of fentanyl as something, I'd even been to a conference on fentanyl in my role as a psychologist. And so I thought of fentanyl as something that got added to things like cocaine or heroin. And I had this, you know, you have this false sense of security, I think, as a parent, when you hear, oh, it was an overdose death. And that's why I like to talk about this as not an overdose death, as a poisoning, because you think, oh, that's not going to happen to my son or daughter because they don't do drugs.
So Matthew is a young man, and the way you described him is a person that almost anybody would like. He had his whole life ahead of him. I know he had plans for the future. He was a junior studying mechanical engineering at Northeastern University, and he was not, in your mind, a drug user, but he died of an overdose of something that contained fentanyl. Do you know what it was, and do you understand why he took it?
Yes, for the most part. We'll never know 100% why, right. But what happened was the police officer did not investigate at all. They said they don't have the resources. There are too many of these fentanyl deaths. Now this was in Boston, but his friends, a couple of days after he died, were gathering his belongings, and they found a bag in his room with these small pills that looked like Percocet. And then they had his phone, they knew his password, and they looked on it, and they saw a Snapchat came up, and it had a menu with these different items you can purchase. So for anyone listening, if anyone you love has a phone, they have a drug dealer in their pocket. So we believe that he ordered what he thought was a Percocet off of Snapchat.
As somebody you didn't view as a drug user, why would he order a Percocet?
Right. I don't know for sure. He was somebody who didn't like a lot of attention and drawing attention to himself. He had hurt his back working for a moving company that summer. Also, he had bad knees from football injuries. And so all I can figure, it was a Wednesday night. He wasn't at a party. He was by himself. He had a test the next morning. So all we know is maybe he was seeking pain relief, or maybe he needed to sleep. We don't know for sure, but we know he didn't want to die.
You mentioned before we started on this program, and it's something I mentioned in the opening, that people are beginning to call this not a drug, but poison. And Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy mentioned it as a poison during the last Republican debate. I'm wondering if that is becoming the school of thought here, Dr. Washington. Are more people considering this because people are taking it unknowingly, without intent, that they are being poisoned, which would make this a poison?
Yeah, and in fact, these deaths are classified officially as poisonings. If you have ever seen a death certificate for someone who had an overdose, it will be listed as a poisoning, accidental or intentional poisoning. And in fact, that's part of the reason why, you know, this really has to be looked as a whole. We don't often know the stories or the circumstances that are surrounding any one overdose or poisoning that occurs in the community. And as I'm sure Dr. Sprague would tell you, you can't, you know, at the end of the day, they do as good a job they can collecting information about the circumstances, but ultimately it comes down to the medical examiner's ability to test for what's available or what's present in a person's system. We may not be able to determine that context. And so, we have to respond on assuming all potential options in every situation.
Because Matthew was smart, he was well-liked, he was outgoing, he was on a success track by all measures, and you did not know that he had any reason to order through Snapchat or any other means an illicit drug, getting that phone call from the Boston police must have made this whole situation not only painful and unbearable, but incomprehensible. What would you say to parents about that? Because that is something, if you can't wrap your head around it, that makes it oh so much worse.
Right. It is. It is. And that's why I'm talking about it, because I think people have a stigma around when they hear overdose and they think of drug users and they don't necessarily know. I think the landscape has really changed. And I have three older daughters. When they were in college, they might have been able to experiment, you know, but I think parents need to talk to their kids or grandparents or aunts and uncles. They have to talk to anyone who will listen, college age, high school, middle school, anything, and let them know that it's not just a simple message of don't do drugs. It's you have to be educated consumer, basically, and understand that this could be in anything. It could be in an Adderall or a Xanax. And there's lots of reasons that kids would look to take those kinds of drugs.
Education is one of the reasons why you've chosen to speak out when you don't like to speak publicly about anything, much less this, because you don't think that the answer is better policing. You think that the answer is better education. What kind of education, what message, and to whom, in what setting?
Good question. So, yes, I think the police, they're doing the best they can to seize these drugs, and the government's trying to do what they can about the source. But really, none of that is, in my opinion, going to change anything like educating kids in schools in particular. I know CMS is working on getting Narcan available, but that's not going to do anything to stop what I believe is happening way too often. So I think that you need to tell kids what it is. You need to tell them if they're going to experiment. For example, never be alone. If Matthew had not been in his room, if he'd been near his friends, they might have been able to call 911 and get him help. So they need to understand they can't, even if it's their friend, no one should ever do drugs alone. They should not just have Narcan, but they should understand what Narcan is and how you use it, etc. So that's what I'm talking about when I say education.
We're going to come back to Narcan in a moment, because that is almost a miracle drug if it's used in the right way at the right time when it comes to this opioid situation. But when we come back, I also want to talk about the idea that education is the approach we should be taking as opposed to better policing, because we've taken that other approach, the policing approach, the arrest and incarceration approach for years. And if all these overdoses from all these drugs are essentially poisonings, is this the new way to do it? Is this the better way to do it? We'll come back and talk about that in a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Lieutenant Robert Sprague is with us from the Vice Unit at CMPD, Dr. Raynard Washington, Health Director of Mecklenburg County Health Department, and Nicole Anderson, a parent of a son who lost his life to an unknowing use of fentanyl at his school in Boston. I want to talk about the approach that we have traditionally taken, Lieutenant, to most of the drug epidemics that we've faced in this country. It usually has been policing. It's been seeking out the pushers, often the users, arresting them, incarcerating them. And we are now taking a different, this fentanyl crisis aside, we are taking a different look at that now, knowing that it hasn't been successful and it's resulted in a lot of societal problems that were unintentional. This new approach of considering these overdoses as being what they are, poisonings, meaning that you shouldn't incarcerate somebody for having been poisoned, but you could incarcerate the person distributing the poison. Is that the way to go? Is that the better way? Is that the way that all police departments are approaching this now?
Well, I think it's a multi-pronged approach. I think you still have to have a law enforcement aspect where, as you said, we're going out and we are arresting the creators of this and the pushers of it or the sellers of it. But at the same time, yes, we absolutely have to have a educational piece, an informative piece that we get out to all the way from our youngest to our oldest, because it hits everybody. We've had educational campaigns previously in all of these drug epidemics, if you will. But this is one that I think there was a lot of look at, this doesn't affect us. This is one section of society. This is one part of town. This is a whole different aspect. This is a different beast. This affects everybody and every part of our city.
And maybe that's why the approach. Sure, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, in addition to that, you know, the way my son got this, what he thought was Percocet, was via Snapchat. And so I think the landscape has also changed. It's so much easier. Any kid with a cell phone essentially has a drug dealer in their pocket.
Yeah. So I'm going to lose my school of thought. Education. There have been drug campaigns, anti-drug campaigns in the past. Mm-hmm. I guess the most famous one of all time was Nancy Reagan's Just Say No campaign, which was aimed at everybody to say no to drugs. And CMPD has launched a new campaign about this particular scourge, this fentanyl scourge. When Nancy Reagan launched it, it didn't work. And I think it was because, even though Nancy Reagan was the first lady, it was the man talking down to the people on the street about, and they weren't going to listen. And you have launched this ad campaign using street language, CMPD has, to appeal to young people about the dangers of fentanyl and about the dangers of taking any pill that did not come from a pharmacy. Is that the kind of education, Nicole, that you're talking about?
Yes, I think that's a good start. I really do. But I think it needs to happen even more. It has to happen in schools. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember, but in, I think it was 1982 or something, I think it was 7 people died from Tylenol poisoning. And it was known all across the country right away. And they shut down production, et cetera. I just feel like this isn't being talked about enough everywhere. And you have to have real conversations with your kids. And if they're going to do this drug or any kind of drug, they have to know that it's potentially not what they think it is.
Dr. Washington.
Yeah, I think the concept that we're sort of talking around here is called harm reduction, essentially. It's making sure that people are aware and informed before they make decisions to consume an illicit drug, and that if they do, that they do everything possible to reduce the risk. And that includes things like potentially testing a drug before you take it. That includes having Narcan available to you in case, as already has been mentioned, it includes not using drugs alone as well, in case there is potentially something that's going to result in an overdose in the substance that you're taking. And so it's really, really important that we, and particularly, and we've been doing this work here in the community as well with some great partners like Queen City Harm Reduction, who work directly with folks in the community to provide that kind of education and awareness, as well as providing those resources directly to folks to be able to avoid fatal overdoses or poisoning.
The current campaign that's been launched by CMPD uses street vernacular to talk about this problem and to address the people on the street. And because this is so widespread, it's not just a certain young category. It's throughout the community that this impacts. I'm wondering if that's the right way to go about this, because first of all, these messages are coming from authority figures being sent to people who may or may not see themselves as having a problem, and therefore they may or may not listen to you for those two reasons. And then you're speaking to them in street language that may or may not relate to them. Lieutenant, what do you think about that?
Well, I agree, but you have to start somewhere. And we have to encourage conversation. And if these words and these campaign that we use sparks a conversation among friends in school or a parent at a dining room table or wherever it may be, that's what we're looking for. You have to have these conversations. It shouldn't be hidden behind closed doors. Open, honest communication between everybody. And we're not going to stop people from using drugs. We understand that. But we have to educate people on what they're out there buying, what they're getting, and what the effects and can happen.
And the other insidious nature of this, Dr. Washington, is that it's not just adults. It's young people. It's young people in college. It's young people in high school and now. it's young people in grade school that it's seeping into. And I want to talk about what's being done in that area. But isn't this illustrative of a much deeper problem? The drugs are the cure for a much deeper problem. Why are we having the need in young people to take these drugs, to seek them out?
Well, I think there are a couple of reasons why someone might. I mean, one, of course, could be a dependency that could have been tied to, fortunately, you know, with the overprescribing of these drugs. Mm-hmm. Kids would have dental procedures and get opioids afterwards, or they'd break a bone playing a sport and become addicted as a result of that. So that's the first group of folks. There's also the general curiosity and experimentation that happens among kids and the pressures of peer pressure of folks around them, of course. And then there's the underlying potential that they are self-medicating some other condition, that which could be behavioral health, mental health, depression, anxiety, that they're seeking out a solution for that they can access, that maybe they're not comfortable talking to their families about or not able to if they don't haven't been to see a provider.
Have we put sufficient resources toward that underlying problem?
Sure. I mean, there are significant efforts happening to of course, address the rise of behavioral health, mental health conditions in our community. I do think the problem's outpacing the solutions at this point, given the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Even it really accelerated those of us experiencing mental distress in the community. And so, as you know, the county's working aggressively on a behavioral health plan to really work more specifically to tackle this issue. We have a workforce shortage issue as well in the behavioral health space. And so even having providers available to meet the growing needs of folks in our community all remain a really critical priority for us at the county, but also have to be not just the county, but really our partners in the community, our healthcare partners, our health systems are so critical, our health insurance companies, and helping us as we mobilize all hands on deck to address.
So the latest statistics that I have say that so far this year, there haven't been any reported incidents of overdoses from opioids in CMS schools, but fentanyl has gotten into the drug supply, and there have been overdoses off campus by young people. There is an antidote, naloxone, also known as Narcan. It's a nasal spray, of all things. It's easy to use. Is it 100% effective, doctor, in reversing the effects of an overdose that hasn't already led to a death?
It is effective, but it's not always successful depending on the amount of drug that's in a person's body. And so there have been incidences where even when with Narcan being administered, the person still does not able to survive because they have such a high concentration of the drug in their body. It is an opioid antagonist, so it blocks the receptors that basically allows the opioid to work. So it depends on how quickly and how much drug has been consumed by the individual, whether or not you have success at avoiding fatality.
And how quickly must it be used if there's any chance for it to work?
It's really a matter of minutes, and so it's really critical that you have it available as quickly as possible. Of course, it can work in longer spans of minutes, but it's most effective if it's administered immediately.
WFAU's education reporter Andas Helms spoke to Charles Jeter, who oversees policy and intergovernmental relations for the Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools. He told her that the state had authorized schools to stock Narcan in 2017. But until now, CMS had a policy that neither authorized nor prohibited it. School resource officers, SROs, as you will hear him talk about in a moment, have carried it for a year, but to his knowledge, Charles Jeter's knowledge, have never had to use it in a school.
We have Narcan in every high school today. Every SRO from the city of Charlotte, Huntersville, and Pineville carries Narcan in our schools today. Now, we only have SROs at high schools, some K-8s, and a smattering of other schools, so it's not widespread.
So again, because SROs, school resource officers, are mainly stationed in high schools, many lower grade schools do not have it on hand, Narcan. And school nurses wanted clear authorization to use it in schools. The CMS School Board Policy Committee is taking this up tomorrow with the goal of voting on a revised first aid and emergency medical care policy on December the 12th. But Charles Jeter says that doesn't mean everything will change right away.
it's not like December 13th, we're all of a sudden going to have a influx of new people that can use Narcan. There's going to be some requirement to get some sort of training. I can't imagine the training to use this is that difficult. I think it's probably more training about how to know when to use it and when not to use it is probably the key here. So how soon will these additional people be able to use Narcan in our schools? Is that January 15th? Is it February 15th? I don't know the answer to that. I feel confident we will have more people have carrying Narcan in our schools sometime in the first quarter of 2024.
So, Doctor, school nurses are employees of the health department. Is the reason they are seeking greater guidance to protect themselves from any fallout of using Narcan on a student? Would that be why?
No, not necessarily. I mean, our school nurses are already trained to administer Narcan. I think there are, as you know, we don't have a nurse that's at a school every single day at all the schools. And so it's also important that there are other first responders on site at campuses that are able to administer Narcan as well.
Are there dangers involved in administering Narcan either incorrectly or in a situation where Narcan would have no effect because they did not ingest an opioid?
No, it's a really it's a very safe drug, actually. And so if the person hasn't administered has not taken opioids, of course, and you administer Narcan, it's not like there's going to be a negative impact. They may have some symptoms, but it won't be anything that's terribly consequential. But if they are overdosing from something else or something else is going on, it won't work. And so it's really important to still take life-saving measures if the Narcan's not working.
Nicole.
Can I just say something about that? Narcan is now available without a prescription. Anybody can go to the drugstore and buy it. I have Narcan. I have a son who's just started a freshman at Chapel Hill. He has Narcan. You don't need to wait for it to happen at school. You can have Narcan in your house and it will save someone's life. Now, you still need to call 911 and have them taken care of and taken to the hospital because the Narcan can wear off or whatever. But people can get Narcan right now without a prescription.
Lieutenant, does CMPD carry Narcan with them?
Yes. Yeah, all of our officers have Narcan.
And doctor, would you recommend that if you have family members who are of the age or in that group that might be tempted to take these drugs, or you have friends who you know take these drugs, would it behoove you as an individual just to have it in your medicine cabinet just in case?
Absolutely. I think if you do or you don't know anybody, because if you don't know anybody, you just don't know that you don't know that you know them, because that's the truth. And in fact, the county, as you know, we have received several $1 million as a part of the opioid settlement, and several a large portion of that will be going towards Narcan acquisition and distribution, which we currently supply to Medic to leave behind with folks who have overdoses in the community or poisonings, as well as the towns and the police department, the prisons, as well as the shelters. And again, as I said earlier, through our community partners, Queen City Harm Reduction, we'll be distributing it on the ground, along with doing additional education in the community.
Is there a danger in having Narcan available? Could it lull young people into a false sense of security that they can do whatever they want because Narcan's in the medicine cabinet?
No, I don't think so at all. I think that it's like having Band-Aids, and it's like learning CPR. You want to just be prepared in the event that something happens.
And I know, Nicole, you wanted to chime in on this too. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to say one more thing for parents listening, that there's a really great organization called Song for Charlie. You can look them up, songforcharlie.org. And it was started by a family just like ours whose son took what he thought was a Percocet and died. And it has so many great resources for parents to learn more about this and education materials for schools. And so I would just recommend anybody who wants to understand more about this to go on there. Our family's done fundraisers for them in Matthew's honor, because it's a really wonderful organization.
Doctor.
Yeah, I just want to uplift again, you know, one of the important messages I hope that that folks are hearing is that this really is impacting every corner of our community. There are folks who think, oh, the opioid epidemic is one group's problem versus another, but it really is impacting every community, our Black and Brown communities, as well as our young folks, our older folks. It's just really important that everybody have this conversation, that we start having this conversation around at every table, that's happening, it's real, that people are dying, and that we need to have Narcan available, and that we need to educate one another and be honest in order for us to be able to protect and save lives.
Dr. Raynard Washington gets the last word. He's the health director at the Mecklenburg County Health Department. He joined us along with Lieutenant Robert Sprague from the Vice Unit at CMP. These drugs are everywhere in every street drug. You don't know, so don't take them. And Nicole Anderson is a parent of a young man named Matthew who lost his life to this inadvertently. Thank you all for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.